After one indulges in sex, many wives of misery stand still. One suffers more and more in material life from his miserly person who cannot properly utilize the wealth he has, and similarly a materialist person misuses the human form. Instead of using it for spiritual masturbation, he uses the body for sense gratification, difference from the miser. Text 23, learners, scholars, and transcendentalists therefore condemn the materialistic path of productive activity because it is the original source and breeding ground for material miseries, both in this life and in the next. For not knowing the value of life, karma is a great situation whereby they suffer in this life and the next. Unfortunately, karmas are very attached to material sense gratification. They cannot appreciate the miserable condition of material life, neither in this life or in the next. Therefore, the Vedas enjoin that one should awaken the spiritual consciousness and utilize all activities within the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord Himself says in Bhagavad Gita, O Son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all experiences that you may perform, should be done as an offering unto me. The results of all one's activities should be utilized not for sense gratification, but for the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord gives all information about Bhagavad Gita about the aim of life, and at the end of Bhagavad Gita, He demands surrender unto Him. People do not generally like this demand, but one who cultivates spiritual knowledge from many births eventually surrenders to the flows of the Lord. Text 24. Stealing or cheating another person out of his money, the conditioned soul, some or other, keeps it in his possession and escapes punishment. Then another man, named Devadatta, cheats him and takes the money away. Similarly, another man, named Vishnumitra, steals the money from Devadatta and takes it away. In any case, the money does not stay in one place. It passes from one hand to another. Ultimately, no one can enjoy the money, and it remains the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Wherefore, riches come from Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, and the goddess of fortune is the property of Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The goddess of fortune cannot stay anywhere but by the side of Narayana. Therefore, another of her names is Chantala, restless. She cannot be peaceful unless she is in the company of her husband, Narayana. For example, Lakshmi was carried away by the materialistic Ravana. Ravana could not see that the goddess of fortune belonged to Lord Rama. As a result, Ravana's entire family, houses, and kingdom were smashed, and see that the goddess of fortune was recovered from his clutches and reunited with Lord Rama. Thus all property, riches, and wealth belong to Krishna, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the true beneficiary of all sacrifices. He is the supreme proprietor of all planetary systems. Foolish materialistic people collect money and steal from other thieves so they cannot keep it. In any case, it must be spent. One person cheats another, and another person cheats someone else. Therefore, the best way to possess Lakshmi is to keep it by the side of Narayana. This is the point of Krishna consciousness movement. We worship Lakshmi along with Narayana. We collect money from various sources, and that money is not on the name of Radha and Krishna. If money is utilized in the service of Lakshmi Narayana, the devotee automatically lives in an opulent way. However, if one wants to enjoy Lakshmi the way Ravana did, he will be vanquished by the law of nature, and whatever few possessions he has will be taken away. On the death belt, take everything away, and death is a representative of Krishna. Being unable to protect himself from the threefold mysteries of material existence, the conditioned soul becomes very morose and lives a life of lamentation. These threefold mysteries are miseries suffered by mental calamity at the hands of demigods, miseries offered by the living entities, and miseries arising from the mind and body themselves. The so-called happy materialistic person is constantly having to endure the threefold mysteries of life for adhyatmika and adhyatmika. Actually, no one can counteract these threefold miseries. All three may assail one at one time, or one misery may be absent and the other present. Thus, the beginning is full of anxiety, fearing misery from one side or the other. The conditioned soul must be disturbed by at least one of these three miseries. There is no escape. So here we have a continuation of the miseries of material life. This particular verse is about para-dharma-para-dramyani. Others, wives or others, properties, taking those things and then getting in trouble for that. So if you agree, you can take to the process of theft. The thief was used previously to describe other people harassing this merchant, thieves attacking. But this person himself becomes a thief, and he steals from others. So in the previous verse was describing how he, the person may even steal from his father or son or whatever, relatives or whatever. So out of desperation for material gain and comforts, the person will steal. This, of course, is a rather pessimistic vision, as we see in this whole section, is pessimistic in regards to the material world, because we don't see all people stealing all the time. But in order to make the point, describes the worst scenario in the material world, where a person is driven to stealing of greed and whatever in order to get his enjoyment. And describes here how he's always suffering. He gets money, somebody steals his money, and somebody steals money from him, etc. So the whole world is filled up of people taking money from others in order to get their enjoyment. So this is the world of competition, where people are struggling to survive. So Darwin has a theory that struggle survival is good in one sense, because it keeps the fittest people alive, or the most qualified persons alive. But when we come to the human being, of course, it's a little different, because the most qualified people to stay alive are those who are most greedy and treacherous, etc. And they can kill others or steal from others. They're not necessarily the best people, but they're the ones that will survive. So we see the criminals and whatever are the ones that will survive if we take the survival of the fittest theory to its end. So this is so, yes, if we have no control over anybody, the tendency will be there that people who are the strongest in terms of material sense gratification, with a lot of intelligence, etc., they can take control and exploit. And we see that happen in many places in the world. We get very totalitarian governments, whatever, exploit everybody. It's happened in the past, and even in the present it happens. So to prevent that type of situation where the survival of the fittest instinct takes place, or whatever is enacted, and we get demons in control, we have the scriptural restrictions and the concept of karma with kings who have proper training and knowledge, and this will inhibit such activities. So in the Bhagavatam we have always descriptions of this competition between demons who try to overthrow Dharma and occupy that position. So this represents the force of materialism overtaking people and getting control. At the same time, we have the Dharma instituted by the Lord and Manus and their descendants. And the Supreme Lord supports that faction. And whenever there's problems, then the Lord himself appears and restores Dharma. So the Dharma of the material world is protected by the Supreme Lord. And this helps maintain or contain this tendency towards exploitation and the rise of the demons. If that's not there, then of course, then we have this situation where a dharma becomes very prevalent. So even if we have a satya yuga period where Brahmanic people are satya, still there's always a tendency that something can happen and we'll have the rise of the demons or whatever. So in all yugas, this tendency will be there too. Take control and enjoy as much as possible by some members of the society. When Krishna was around, the Kamsa got in control and he persecuted everybody, even though everybody wasn't a demon. He persecuted those who were following Dharma and he took control. So the demonic force represents this type of person here described in this particular chapter, where they go to extremes to satisfy their material desires. But of course, as I said, it's not all people at all times will be in this position. This is a tendency, but it is not always manifest in all people at all times. Some people it manifest to an extreme degree. So these are the persons we call the demons. So because it is there, the tendency may be there and may be not visible or whatever, it may arise in any person due to our position in the material world where the basis of our material existence is ignorance and desire to enjoy. So somehow or other, under certain circumstances, still this type of situation may arise for an individual, though it's not displayed at all times in that person. So therefore, the warning is here given in a very severe way by making general statements, everybody's a thief, and everybody is greedy, etc. To warn people of that danger that can arise for anybody in the material world. So here we have this description of the actions of criminal people. And it describes here how everybody is suffering in the material world from the threefold miseries. Again, it's a general statement, but we see that it's not that people are always suffering all the time. Some people, if they do sattvic activities, they don't suffer so much. And even those in tamogun, sometimes may enjoy very nicely in the material world. So nevertheless, in the long run, due to the effects of karma, you'll find that those people who do enjoy by illicit means, eventually, in some lifetime, will have to suffer greatly, if not in this lifetime. So we don't see suffering completely prevalent, but at the same time, those who get their enjoyment due to simple activity eventually will have to come to this position of suffering in the material world. And it may take any of these forms, that is, from outside, from the demigods or whatever, from other living entities, or for in one's own body and mind due to sickness or whatever. So, sufferings are there. In Satpurguna, relatively less. In upper planets, relatively less. In Brahma Loka, almost not there. Nevertheless, even in Brahma Loka, one has to give up the material body sooner or later. So that is also some sort of misery. And one cannot escape that. So that is like daiva, due to karma. Even a person on Brahma Loka has to give up his material body eventually. So the as Bhagavad Gita says that the material world is a place of misery, bhukalaya. So that suffering on its lower features on our planet, of course, are very obvious. As we get higher, it is less obvious. But nevertheless, it is always present. So anywhere in the material world, everything is subject to that suffering of some sort. And why? Because ultimately everything is very temporary. So even the happiness we get in the material world is subject to disappear at a certain point. And therefore, that is the suffering there. So happiness is here in the material world, but it's temporary. Therefore, when it goes, we have to suffer. So, in that way, the miseries are prevalent within the material world. Due to the illusion, however, because of the happiness, we will tolerate the distress. When the balance of happiness is there, then we will tolerate the distress. And that happiness, of course, is an illusion of happiness, this is temporary. But we will continue to struggle in the material world to get that happiness because of that ignorance that covers the jiva. And only when that ignorance is removed can we correctly perceive the true nature of the material world. So therefore various tactics are used. So sometimes analogies are used. So we have here the analogy of the man in the forest, which has gone on for the last two chapters. Or we have the example of Paranjana in his city, whatever. So these examples are given in order to help the jiva break out of that illusion by illustrating the hopeless position of the person in the material world. So in this case, we have the person in the forest attacked by various miseries and enemies and animals and discomforts, etc. So this rather desolate picture of the living entity is presented in order to smash the illusion of happiness in the material world. As I said, there is, of course, degrees of misery or whatever, but ultimately the basis of all of this, even the happiness in the material world, is it's all temporary, so there's some illusion attached to it. So to break that illusion, this example is given where the living entity is constantly suffering and suffering in the material world due to his ignorance. So by knowledge, ignorance is removed. So the scriptures present us that knowledge to help us get rid of that ignorance and the attachments and the illusions that we have concerning the happiness in the material world.
Soul doesn't perceive any miseries or sufferings. Then why is that the soul is not
miserable? It's an experience, isn't it? It's the experience of everything. If it didn't experience it, then we wouldn't have any misery in the material world. Jiva is the Bhokta, the experiencer of everything.
Oh, sorry, you're there.